Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell, and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. On Fridays, we'll be here to preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action, and I've got my co-host George Ellick and Bet365 Steve Freith alongside me to help out. How are you both?
I'm okay. I'm still awaiting more messages from Manchester United fans after the after the performance and the result on the weekend, because I think a fair few of them didn't really like my fifth place prediction, and fair to say that the performance made me look a little bit foolish at this early stage. I was just happy that I managed to get the BTTS and over 2.5 up, because at least that helped me save face a little bit thanks to Luke Ayling 30-yard wonder strike.
Yeah, I mean, we all said a lot of things on last week's show, but if Manchester United were listening to you, George, they certainly gave you a response. Mm. Steve, what did you make of the weekend, and what were the big moves at 365 after the first round of matches?
Yeah, great weekend, Dan, for me. I listened to a bit of Elton John on Saturday. Saturday night's all right, I thought.
So did I, unfortunately.
and Rocket Man, of course, with Saar down the right-hand side. But it was a great weekend. Loads of changes, as you'd expect. Manchester City, after that slow start, like Pep told us that would happen, have gone from 4-6 to 11-10. So they're now odds are against. And Chelsea, Liverpool and Manchester United have all shortened. Chelsea are now actually second favourites at 7-2. And at the bottom, of course, their Premier League struggles continue. Norwich 8-11, you know, a heavy defeat without scoring. But I think Daniel Farke's got some excuses after their pre-season. Palace one shot on target. They're 6-5 now to be relegated. Brentford up next for them, of course, who were fantastic on the Friday night. The Clarets 5-2 into 6-4. I'm sure we'll talk about them later. I better just mention the Villa, Dan. 8-1 now to be relegated after that. And I might be cutting that price even further when Steve Bruce leaves B6 with all 3 points on Saturday.
Don't be silly, Steve. Do not be silly. What about Arsenal? Arsenal are the ones you should be talking about, not Villa.
33s, pal. So they are four times the price of you.
We are, of course, going to talk a fair bit about betting today. And so it's important that first we remind all our listeners to please gamble responsibly. And George, I believe you've got some solid tips for how we can make sure we're all doing that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners to this podcast are in control of their gambling, and worth reminding you that this is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older, and that you're only staking what you can afford to lose. Do make sure you visit begambleaware.org for any information and to ensure that you are gambling responsibly.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, George. And just a quick plug for The Athletic before we dive in. Let me quickly remind you that you can sign up at the moment and you'll save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sport. So that's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. All you got to do is go to theathletic.com/Ornstein and you'll be able to do just that. First game then, Liverpool v Burnley, Steve, and Jota started ahead of Firmino last week. Might have been a surprise, but is this the first signs of Liverpool moving away from that famed front three?
Well, I mean, they've been fantastic, haven't they, over the years. You know, expected goals, fans of that will know about Firmino over the last three seasons. He's underachieved with his goals. 4 last season, 8 by the season before. And Jota was you know, overscored by 2 last season. Listen, Firmino is more than a goal scorer, isn't he, in that Liverpool setup? He brings so much more to the side in that false nine. But I think it helps the fact that you've got 4 of them now to mix it up just a little bit. And maybe Firmino might be playing for his future. I know a few other big names have actually signed contracts recently. I'm not sure he has, but a great start for him nevertheless last weekend at Norwich.
Yeah, we kind of talked about Liverpool, George, that there'd be an improvement. Van Dijk coming back would be massive. And as soon as Virgil van Dijk comes back, they look like the Liverpool of old.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it was a although I'm a fan of this Norwich side, it was a perfect game for this Liverpool season to get underway and forget the difficulties of the last campaign. And I thought Norwich at times looked fairly tidy on the ball. They created probably more chances than a fair few teams will create against Liverpool this season. But it felt to me like this was the beginning of another title tilt for Liverpool. You mentioned Jota there, who I think offers something more than just quality in that centre, or the false nine role, as Steve said, but also just options across the front three, where if Firmino does come in, Jota's very capable of playing on the left-hand side and in that Mane role as well. And providing competition for that front three has got to be a good thing. So with so many more players still to come into the first team, you know, you look at that Liverpool team and yes, Van Dijk is back and Matip is back. Robertson obviously out with his injury, set to come back. But the midfield three of Keita, Milner and Oxlade-Chamberlain, you'd be pretty surprised to see that midfield three starting again at any time this season with the likes of Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago all to come in as well. So it was a pretty good start to this campaign, and I think there's more still to come from this Liverpool side.
Yeah, and Steve, talking of Jordan Henderson, the man, David Ornstein, finds out everything first at The Athletic. Looks like he's going to sign a three-year contract with the option of a fourth. George has just mentioned that not much seen midfield makeup on Saturday. Is there still a place for Jordan Henderson in this Liverpool side?
I would say so. Fantastic leadership as well that he brings to the football club. He's had a great career there after being written off at the start, and he's just gone from strength to strength there. I'd imagine that a fit and firing Jordan Henderson would definitely in Jurgen Klopp's starting 11.
Yeah, I think that the key with Henderson seems to be that he's worth more to Liverpool than he could ever be worth to any other club. I mean, I don't think anybody's sitting here thinking that Jordan Henderson is one of the most technically gifted centre midfielders in European football. But for what he's overseen there as captain, for the relationship he has with Jurgen Klopp and the players and the fans, just him being in the building for the next 3 or 4 years is a massive positive for them, and it helps that he's also a very good midfielder who can at a stretch play in that sitting role, but most comfortably on the right hand side of the three too. So a big signing, and I think if this contract saga had rolled on and it had ended with Henderson leaving, it would have been the first sign of this Jurgen Klopp era at Liverpool ending, and with his long-term future secured, I think we can see them continue to build under his management.
Yeah, it's a good thing as well it was a negative season last season, but in the end they ended it quite well and ended up getting that fourth place and getting the Champions League football. But in the midst of that bad run, maybe the start of the bad run, Burnley won at Anfield. Yeah. But this time, Steve, the Anfield roars there. That wasn't there last time.
It is, of course. I mean, Burnley were only 9-1 to win last season, Dan, there. Of course, they ended Liverpool's 68-game unbeaten run. So there are only nines, and I think they might have played Liverpool. I'll say at the right time, of course, because Liverpool was still unbeaten, but they hadn't won in 4 games, I think, in the league since Christmas. They dropped points against the Albion, for goodness sake. Newcastle and Southampton as well. I know they beat your kids, didn't they, in the FA Cup, and they've drawn at home to United. And that Burnley defeat started a run of 6 home defeats for them. However, I think there are slight concerns about Burnley. Of course, that's why they are a 16-1 shot. But we are actually 6-1, Dan, for them to make it a fortress this season, as it has been previously. So 6-1 to go unbeaten at Anfield in the Premier League. And they're actually 100-1 with ourselves to go unbeaten throughout the whole Premier League.
Yeah, Steve's one of those typical West Brom fans that can remember every single Aston Villa defeat, but I bet he couldn't name every West Brom win. George, Burnley, they kind of feel like they need a playing staff refresh at this point. It's very samey, isn't it, year after year at the moment? I think they might struggle this season.
Yeah, I think they might. Steve will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're now 6-4 for relegation with Bet365. Which is a fair snip after week one. I think part of that will be because both Brentford and Watford had unexpected wins, two of the favourites for relegation. And there seems to be this idea that, you know, it happened in the past with Sam Allardyce, that Sean Dyche guarantees you Premier League safety. And especially with kind of my betting hat on, binary sweeping generalisations like that just aren't true. You know, you look at Burnley's last 5 seasons in the top flight. Yes, they came 7th one season and had one very other good mid-table finish. But in the other 3, they've got 40 points, 40 points and 39 points. That is just keeping your head above water in terms of not getting relegated. They finished 17th last season. They are a couple of other sides having decent seasons away from getting relegated. And, you know, they're being linked to certain players in the press at the moment that suggest they have an understanding that they have to improve. But I definitely am concerned for them. And I think after an opening day defeat against Brighton, where they hit the woodwork twice when they were 1-0 up and ended up losing the game 2-1, It would take a brave man to predict they'll get anything from this one. I think it's a case of last season was an uncharacteristically poor Premier League season, given the teams that went down were just so abject for big parts of it, that that if we don't see an improvement from Burnley this time around, they could be in trouble.
Yes, George, I would add to that, their home form has to be a worry as well for me at Turf Moor. I know in 2021 they went away at Palace and Everton and Wolves and Fulham as well. But I think we all associate, you know, the tricky trip to Turf Moor, don't we? And I don't think that was last season. And of course, as you mentioned last week, where they looked so much in control in that first half, Tarkowski and me just peppering that Brighton goal with set plays. And they only managed to get one out of those, which is unfortunate. Listen, we've written off Sean Dyche so many times. He comes back. I think there's just a slight concern off the field as well for me. I'm not sure he signed that new contract yet. Let's see what happens. But we have cut them from 5-2 to 6-4 after that opening day defeat.
I was going to say as well, surely Dyche looks at someone. I mean, I know that he's got a more of a track record in top flight football.
How long can he keep doing it though, George? That's the thing.
And I'm sure he'll be aware that it's much better for him to eventually take one of these jobs that he must have been courted for in the last couple of seasons. And ensure that it's not going to be a case of him having to, you know, his stock is high now. As soon as they drop into that bottom three, that all changes very quickly. Chris Wilder was being linked to the Arsenal job 6 months before he ended up being sacked from Sheffield United. You know,
he'd take a championship job now, wouldn't he?
Things change very, very quickly. And yeah, I mean, I'm a massive fan of Sean Dyche, and I think he's done an incredible job there. And it would be unfair of us to expect him to continue to do that season on season.
Yeah. What's your tip then for this game, George?
Well, I don't know if you've had a look at who's on the whistle, Dan, but it is all punters' friend Mike Dean taking charge of the game at Anfield. And as soon as you see that
penalty.
Mike Dean,
penalty.
I'm going to the cards market. As soon as you see that man has got the whistle around his neck, you've got to go straight to the card market and have a look at what's available. And I saw in my research that Burnley, that 1-0 win to Burnley at Anfield last season, Mike Dean was also on the whistle then as well and gave three bookings, one of which was to Fabinho, who I think we can expect will probably come in at centre midfield on Saturday in the early kickoff here. Now, digging down to Fabinho's card stats, getting a bit nerdy here, he has been booked 6 times in all of the last 3 seasons in the Premier League. Given looking at the minutes played as well, it averages out that last season he was booked once every 4.75 games, the season before once every 3.85 games, and the season before that 3.72 games. Now, that might look like it's trending in the wrong direction in terms of him being booked less times as we're getting along in his career, but remember that last season he was playing centre back for a majority of that, and you are far more likely to be booked playing as that holding midfielder, especially against a team like Burnley, who not only will be playing on the counter attack but also have certain characters, Ashley Barnes, for example, who might enjoy getting into that physical battle and trying to rile the Liverpool players. So the 9-2 for me of Fabinho being shown a card looks just too big, both in terms of stats itself and because we've got the card happy, shall we say, Mike Dean in charge of proceedings, and also just stylistically given the role that Fabinho is likely to play.
Cool, you were right about being nerdy, Dan, right? Gee, you went deep there, didn't you?
I saw you fall asleep there, Steve.
Right, then let's look at the tea time game on Saturday evening then, Brighton versus Steve's favourite team, Watford. Yeah, Brighton. We'll start with Brighton. We won't talk about Watford too much. There's shivers down my spine hearing their name. But Brighton, Steve, substitutions. Change the game for Potter.
Of course, yeah. And I think Brighton are a lot of people's second favourite team, aren't they? Because they like Potter. They're going to be interested to see where he goes in his career. And listen, Brighton touched 28-1 in play last week at Burnley. That's a big old price, especially with them being under the pump so much in that first half, as we mentioned as well. Shane Duffy was a rare starter for them as well. George knows I love a player from set pieces. And for him to come in the side, I think he had three or four attempts as well from a set play, which was great. People who want to be with Brighton have been with Brighton this season on the handicap and things like that. They're even money now to finish in the top half down the XG Kings. And they are odds on to win this game here against Watford. This game has a history of being low scoring. I think only one of the last 10 games actually had over 2.5 goals as well. And while Brighton are favourites to win, I think we are expecting, according to the markets, a low scoring one in this.
Yeah. Well, Watford, the biggest surprise of the weekend, George. It certainly surprised me. Sobered me up pretty quickly in that first half.
I don't want to jump on the bandwagon here of Steve's Villa bashing, but my first note here on my laptop says Villa are shambles, which I think might sum up a little bit. I think it would be easy to get carried away, especially by the aesthetic of Watford being 3-0 up at home to Villa on opening day, because Villa were a mess, you know, defensively just a total and utter mess. And Watford had so much joy every time springing them on the counter. I mean, Ismaïla Sarr had Matt Target on toast all day. And I'm not necessarily convinced that they are going to have it that easy consistently. Brighton, I think, stylistically plays into their hands a little bit again. We know what Brighton will do. They will look to dominate possession in kind of the middle third of the pitch. They'll look to press hard as soon as they lose the ball, in a similar way to how Dean Smith likes his Villa team to play as well, probably a little bit based. So that should suit Ismaïla Sarr again and Emmanuel Dennis, with the space in behind Dennis getting a debut goal. And looking at the, again, getting nerdy for you here with some stats, looking at the passing stats from the game against Villa, of their 317 attempted passes, 63 of them were long balls and 40 on top of that were headers, which just shows the attritional style of play that Watford were looking to do, basically just get the fast players in behind, launch it long, try and turn the defenders. And that, I guess, is what will happen here. So am I rethinking my views on Watford as being one of the likely teams to go down on the back of it? Definitely not. I think they're still going to have their work cut out, and this will be a harder test.
Fully agree with that. Now, do either of you know anything about Cucho Hernandez, who scored with his first touch against Villa at the weekend? Lovely goal. Either of you know anything about him?
I know I cheered it. I think we dropped a bit of a ricket. We were actually 14-1 him to be top Watford goal scorer this season. So I'm going to be,
What's the price now?
I wish it won't be 14s, George, believe me. I think that needs another look at it. I think we might have dropped a rick on that one.
Well, one man who does know an awful lot about Cucho is Adam Leventhal, who's going to tell us a little bit more about him now.
Hi there, it's Adam Leventhal here. And I hate to say I told you so, but I did flag Cucho Hernandez as my breakthrough star for Watford for this season. I'll be brutally honest though, I wasn't expecting him to make an impact within 49 seconds of coming onto the field.
He's straight into the thick of things. Oh! It's been 4 years in the making, but it is a stunning introduction to English football.
It was brilliant to see him in the sunshine with that flash of bright blonde hair and that beautiful smile, curling the ball past Emi Martinez for the third Watford goal. The background to him is that it was a goal 4 years in the making. He joined back in 2017. He originally had a loan spell at America de Cali back in his homeland of Colombia. And since then, there were further loans at Huesca, at Mallorca and Getafe. He could have been at Watford if things had been different, if they hadn't have been relegated in 2019-20, he may well have been at Watford a little bit earlier on. But now he's here and he's made a great impact. And he is a classic Pozzo signing. They signed him from Deportivo Pereira in Colombia for only about £200,000. And that's what they do. Buy them cheap, buy them young, polish them up, and then give them wings and let them fly. And we will see how much of an impact he can continue to have in the Premier League. Quick word, his hero is Sergio Aguero. If he can make half the impact that Aguero had at Manchester City, then Watford fans who have already taken him to their hearts will be very, very happy indeed.
Thanks very much to Adam and George. To finish on this game, you're down for the tip.
Yeah, I know what Steve said about the expectation being for a low-scoring affair, and I want to take advantage of that and get with goals. Brighton are a team under Graham Potter who generally are very good going forward, but we saw them concede a lot of chances, especially in the first half against Burnley, before they switched from their four back into the usual five or three or five at the back, depending on how you want to look at it. Watford, as I say, I think will still get joy in behind as well. But even in their last 10 away games last season in the Championship, when under Cisco, they were doing such good things and getting towards getting their promotion out of the division. They only kept 3 clean sheets. So I think it's going to be an open affair. Both teams to score at 21-20 appeals. And you can probably add the over 2.5 in there as well at 7-4. So I'm siding with goals, getting against the market.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Game three that we're going to look at is Southampton versus Manchester United at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Steve, were Leeds the perfect opposition for United, or were they just that good and Bruno and Pogba in absolutely scintillating form?
Yeah, they were fantastic, weren't they? They were well publicised. Pogba's 4 assists in 68 minutes, of course, and you know, more than he had in 26 matches last season, of course. And Bruno Fernandes with his hat trick, which has seen him shorten both in the outright top goalscorer market into 6-1 and 14-2 into 6-1 for the PFA Player of the Year award as well. So I think he might be facing, or United may be facing, an undercooked midfield as well. This week, Romeo and Ward-Prowse haven't had a great deal of pre-season football, which I think will be a concern for Southampton in a game that Manchester United historically seem to tend to win by 3-2, being a goal down with about 3 minutes to go, and they always seem to come back and, you know, perform magnificently. So they are the outsiders down at 6-1 of the big four to actually win the Premier League, and 66-1 to go unbeaten away from home. And I think they need to leave the South Coast unscathed to match a record of Arsenal's Invincibles of 27 as well. So no doubt where the market thinks that Manchester United will come away unscathed as well this weekend.
You know, you talk about where Leeds the perfect opposition, and I think it would be doing Leeds discredit to say that they're the perfect opposition for anyone to play against, because under Marcelo Bielsa, they are a very, very good side. However, we've seen consistently over the last couple of years that Manchester United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer are a very, very good side against teams who step out and look to play against them. They absolutely, I mean, the likes of Greenwood and Bruno with Pogba's through ball passing ability, when they're spacing behind to exploit, they are absolutely expert at doing it. And that was the case here. And I think that'll be the case on Sunday against Saints as well, because Southampton are a team who under Ralf Hasenhüttl like to press high, like to get the ball down, like to send men forward. And I think United will have more joy. It seems impossible otherwise. And when you've got the likes of Pogba and Bruno Fernandes, that was two world-class players at the very top of their game dismantling another Premier League side. It was breathtaking to watch. And when you consider the players who weren't in, you know, Sancho didn't start, you've still got Varane to come in, you've got Cavani to come back to, Greenwood looking back on form as well. This United squad, it just showed how good they can be. It showed that as the performance level that this group of players, the group of players from last season, can perform too. And I think Saints will have a lot of trouble playing their normal game, trying to stop them.
Who gets the man of the match in the instance of 4 assists and three goals? Who takes the man of the match award there? Because Bruno's got the ball, hasn't he? So surely it's Pogba. just trying to think how that would work.
I thought Pogba was extraordinary, because it wasn't just 4 assists where, you know, he's rolled at 2 yards and someone's tapped
in. Exactly.
The level of creativity, the vision and the execution to pull it all off, it was as good a performance as you're probably going to see at this level from a creative midfielder.
Yeah. And my favourite goal of the weekend, it wasn't Cucho Hernandez against Aston Villa. It was actually Adam Armstrong's finish against Everton, Steve. Mm. Lovely finish. Honestly, so composed on your debut to put that in the top bins like he did. Who would you say is the better natural finisher, Adam Armstrong or Mason Greenwood?
Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, Greenwood's 19 and Armstrong's, you know, 24. You know, both are very good on both sides, both left and right. Greenwood's done it in the Premier League, and Armour has, you know, one goal in the top flight. I think different positions suit the players as well, Dan. I think Armstrong's best position is through the middle, as we found out at Blackburn. Well, Greenwood is better either off the right or as a 10, I think. And fans of XG, I hark back to that again, but Greenwood's hot streak in the 2 seasons ago where he got 10 goals from an XG of 5 with a 25% conversion rate. Yet it was so different last season where it was 7 goals from around 7 and just a 10% conversion rate. As you saw Armour last season, 45% of his shots were on target, 10 from a left foot, 15 from his right, three headers. And I you can't see this, but I do have a signed shirt of Adam Armstrong actually on my wall. I do actually, I think he's a fantastic footballer. But if you're asking me who's the better finisher, I would have to go with Greenwood, even though there's 5 years difference between the two.
I think it's horses for courses as well, isn't it? I mean, I know who I want. If the ball is coming across at an angle and he's firing it across the keeper into the far corner like he did on the weekend, it's Mason Greenwood. If it's running onto a ball, trying to sit the keeper down and lift it over him like Adam Armstrong did, it's probably him. I mean, those two goals encapsulated
so
well.
They're different players, George, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. what they're all about. And, you know, it's great to see Armstrong doing it in the Premier League, because I mentioned it on the podcast last week, he scores every single different kind of goal, which is an amazing skill to have as a striker. Whereas I think we know where Greenwood likes the ball, and we know the way he likes to finish, and the laser accuracy of his finishes across the keeper, I've never seen anything like it. It's he kind of mixes the Jermaine Defoe style of smashing it with whilst also going for laser accuracy in the corner. It's incredibly impressive for a young kid.
Here's a prediction for you. Mason Greenwood will win the PFA Young Player of the Year award this season.
Good shout.
Yeah,
good
shout. I don't disagree.
Is that your tip, Steve? Or have you got another tip for us?
Well, yes, that is my one tip. And also, I do fancy goals in this. I think a 3-2 repeat is 25-1, Dan. But I'm just going to play a little bit safer and go with over 4.5 goals at around the 4-1 mark.
I like it. I like your thinking. Game four this week is a London derby, Arsenal against Chelsea, relegation candidates against title contenders. Before we get into it, Arsenal correspondent Art Deroche has had a look at the areas Arsenal really struggled with against Brentford on opening night, so let's take a listen.
Going into the Brentford game, I think a lot of people would have thought the absence of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Alexandre Lacazette would have a big effect, but in reality, Arsenal played as they had done throughout pre-season, with a very big emphasis on Kieran Tierney on that left-hand side. Of course, we've all seen that he created the most chances of any player in the Premier League in the first game week. So that was something that is quite predictable with Arsenal's play. And I think with Martin Ødegaard coming in and Emile Smith-Rowe, they should combine well together to kind of counteract that and make Arsenal's play a bit less predictable, less lethargic, because they did have a lot of struggles breaking into the final third, and that's the biggest area where they can improve.
I think we touched on this last week, George, but Arsenal have obviously tripped up in their first game against Brentford. Chelsea is as tough as it gets on the second week, and then Man City after that. You know, they're looking at potentially being bottom by the end of game week three.
Your words, not mine. No, but you are right. I mean, that opening day, everything from the moment it transpired that Aubameyang and Lacazette were out due to illness, of which we still know very little about what illness it is and whether or not they're going to be fit for this weekend, it meant that a lot of the players who Arsenal fans are desperate to see were thrust on the pitch together on opening day of the Premier League and were well beaten by a Brentford side who just on the night were the better team. I mean, there's just no denying that on that evening, those two sides, Brentford, were just a better footballing team than Arsenal. And that is a hell of a pill to swallow for Arsenal fans. They need the much maligned players, senior pros. I think they need them back, to be honest. They need them to find a way of getting some points on the board, because Mikel Arteta is undoubtedly now under a lot of pressure after that opening day defeat, and looking at the fixture list, as you mentioned, it's difficult for him to see where the next wins are going to come from. I mean, Chelsea are 3-4 in this game with Bet365. That is incredibly short for Chelsea travelling to the Emirates. I'd love to know the historical prices of that fixture for the last 5 or 6 seasons. There's no way it's ever been that short. And that is in itself a statement on where Arsenal are now as a football team. You know, they're going to get Martin Odegaard in, who was part of their mediocre side last season. He's obviously undoubtedly a talent, but him alone isn't going to be enough to take them from where they were last weekend up to where they think they should be. So it's, you know, they Arsenal have a bit of a history of these good ends to season and then coming back the season after when there's a bit of optimism around the place and it immediately not transpiring to be as positive as the fans hoped. And yeah, it was a shocking start to their season.
George, they were exactly the same price last season on Boxing
Day. Really?
Chelsea, yeah, they were, yeah. And of course, that kind of kick-started Arsenal's season, I think. I think Smith Rowe came into the side and they went on to be the fourth best side in 2021, I think. And we've also got a market on how many points Arsenal get over those next two games against Chelsea and Manchester City. So it's 7-5 that they start the season with three defeats on the bounce and get 0 points, and actually 33-1 to win both games against Chelsea and Manchester City. We think 1-2 points out of the two games at 15-8. With 3-4 points at 9-4. So clearly for them to beat both teams is a big old prize. But let's not forget, they did do the double over Chelsea last season.
I'll be shocked if they score a goal across the first three games, to be honest, after watching the other night.
I'm trying to be positive, Dan. I'm trying to put a positive spin on things, yeah.
And just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, George, up pops Lukaku to Stamford Bridge. Not really who they want to be facing, is it?
No, it's not. You know, I can repeat myself from last week, but I don't think anyone wants to hear that. It's an unbelievable signing. And when you look at the embarrassment of riches that Chelsea already have, you know, on opening day, they could just rest the Champions League winning goal scorer Kai Havertz, one of the most exciting prospects in English football. Rest him on opening day, bring him on with 10 minutes to go. And then you can add Lukaku to that attacking talent as well. N'Golo Kante to come back too. It's just, they are have so much quality. And any doubts that maybe this Chelsea side was a bit of a flash in the pan under Thomas Tuchel last season, I mean, they were imperious against Palace. We don't know how strong that form is, of course. You know, Palace under Patrick Vieira are a work in progress at best. They didn't impress on the day at all. A lot of warning signs from people who watched Patrick Vieira's side last season over in France, that it wasn't a great deal to suggest that he is a top tactician at the moment, but they couldn't have done it any more impressively. And Trevor Chalobah as well coming in to the side and looking so impressive. So yeah, I mean, Lukaku coming in is just another incredible bit of business. I mean, I'm not talking financially a bit of business, but purely in footballing terms. Is he the missing part of the puzzle? I didn't know if there was necessarily a part missing to start with, but he certainly helps.
George, Lukaku, we have a market on his goals this season as well. And so we're 6-1 him to get 15 or fewer goals. And we're actually only 7-2 him to get 25 or more. So huge respect for a player that a number of years ago managed to score 17 for a West Bromwich Albion side. So you can imagine what he's going to do in this type of side as well. I'm looking forward to see how he does. And of course, and I know he'll have his backers as well, particularly the each-way thieves like yourself, George, with four places available in the top goal scorer market as well.
Interesting you said that. Well, I mean, my tip for this one is a Lukaku based, and it is a bit of each way thievery maybe, but I'm very surprised to see where he's priced up in the goal scorer market on the day. He's 7-2 first goal scorer. He's 11-2 to score two or more. He's 11-10 to score any time. And now, to put that into context, you know, 11-10 means that he's, you know, just under 50% chance of him scoring a goal on the day. Given that Chelsea are 3-4 favourites, so you know their goal line itself is well above one, and they're expected to score. If you're looking around other players in the Premier League this weekend, Bruno Fernandes is pretty much the same price for Manchester United at Southampton. You've got Ilkay Gundogan is odds on to score against Norwich. Jack Grealish is 11-8 to score against Norwich. I mean, I think that is a total misrepresentation of the likelihood of Lukaku scoring if he does get on the pitch here. I cannot imagine in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, if when Chelsea are that price to win a game of football, Lukaku will still be 7-2 to score the first goal. I think that's probably the way to play this one as well, because with Lukaku coming to the side early, often with new signings, you can see them making way. Even if after a good performance, he might come off fairly soon. But I think that is definite value. When you think that Mohamed Salah is often kind of 15-8, 7-4 to score first, and the way they're priced up side by side in the top goal scorer market. Yeah, I think that price is basically there because there's no data at the moment. He hasn't played for Chelsea yet. There's no goal scoring data in the Premier League in the last couple of seasons. But I'm pretty confident in its value. And of course, if Lukaku doesn't start and he comes onto the pitch when a goal's already been scored, then you get your money back anyway. So no harm done.
There was a podcast on the Athletic Football Show feed earlier on the week where Flo and myself spoke to Liam Toomey, the Chelsea writer, about Chelsea season. So if you do want to hear more about Chelsea, go back and listen to Wednesday's podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You're listening to the brand new Athletic Football Podcast, and this is what we have planned for you across our network this season. The Ornstein and Chapman podcast has been rebranded as the Athletic Football Podcast. We'll release four episodes across the week as our journalists bring you the very best insight into the biggest stories in football and the business of sport. Michael Cox will continue to bring you the smartest analysis of all the big games in the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. Adam Hurry will now host two episodes of the Football Clichés podcast every single week, with his usual take on the game. There's a brand new Athletic FPL podcast with our fantasy football expert, the FPL General, giving you all the advice you need to stay ahead of your mates and top of the FPL rankings. And the Athletic Podcast Network is also home now to a host of club-specific shows, some of which are going to be releasing multiple episodes every week. And we're now your destination, don't forget, for the Totally Football Show with James Richardson and the Totally Football League Show. And that is it. And then we can't fit any more in. All you've got to do is search for The Athletic in your podcast provider of choice or go to our podcast section on the Athletic app. Not surprisingly, with all of the stuff that I've just mentioned, The Athletic is now the world's biggest football podcast network.
Let's finish then with the televised games. It's Monday Night Football, West Ham United against Leicester City, 8 p.m. kickoff, and evergreen Jamie Vardy, George, just shows absolutely no signs of slowing down at all.
It was my favourite goal of the weekend. I think it,
lovely
not,
finish.
Not just the Premier League. It was also,
I liked it too. I liked it too, guys. It was a good finish.
It was the Pereira nutmeg as well to start it, and rolling between two of them, the ball in, and then just an unbelievable finish. There aren't many strikers in the Premier League, I think, who'd have the tenacity to get there in front, and also the finishing ability to loft that ball into the roof of the net. A brilliant finish. And he's just, I don't see any reason why he would slow down. I mean, I remember I did a podcast about a year ago with Gary Taylor Fletcher, who's an old teammate of his from Leicester. And he said that in the game itself, everybody who knows Jamie Vardy doesn't understand why he can't keep doing this for 5 or 6 years, because he's still the fittest guy in the Leicester squad. He's still the fastest guy in the Leicester squad. He defies all logic in terms of how old he is. And, you know, for Patson Daka and Kelechi Iheanacho, I'm sure Daka's come in hoping he'll be the successor, but he might have to bide his time, as good a player as he is. So, incredible finish. I thought Leicester on the day were maybe a bit disappointing. We saw there, with Pereira and Vardy, two moments of real quality to win a game of football where Wolves probably created the better chances. Adama Traore caused Leicester no end of problems, and surprisingly for him, I mean, that's not a surprise there, but he was getting himself into decent goal scoring opportunities as well. I think he had four shots on the day itself. So I think the scoreline maybe flattered Leicester a little bit. And going into this one, it's a tricky game against West Ham side who came back from a difficult position against Newcastle.
Yeah, top shithouse celebration as well. Howling in front of the Wolves fans. Only Jamie Vardy can do something like that. I think any other player would try doing anything like that. Steve, could this be Saeed Benrahma's year? Off to a good start to the season, looked lively.
He looked great, didn't he? I think he was probably the furthest player up the pitch as well. He's had a cracking pre-season with goals and assists. And of course, if you think back to his time at Brentford, where I think the season before he joined West Ham, 17 goals and 9 assists. Season before that, 10 goals and 15 assists. So he brings both to the party, which is great. And he's had a season there now at West Ham. And I think this season is going to be a big one for him. You can just feel it. I know there's a lot of workload on Antonio, so it'll be great for him to get a few goals as well, take a little bit of a pressure off. I think West Ham still need a striker, by the way. But he was 6-1, actually, to be top scorer in pre-season. I had a look at that earlier as well. So things are looking up for him. And certainly, I was unsure whether West Ham... I'm still unsure. Clearly, it's a big ask for them to do anything what they did last season, which is absolutely fantastic to be in a Champions League race. Them and Leicester, of course, both were, and unfortunately both missed out. But I'm excited to see how Benrahma does this season.
Yeah, and George, last season, David Moyes did the double over Brendan Rodgers. Do you see it being a repeat or will there be revenge?
Well, yeah, they scored 3 goals in both the games, didn't they? It was 3-0 and 3-2. I think it would be a brave call to say that they're going to do the same again. But as I mentioned, I thought Leicester looked a little bit short, I must say, against Wolves. We don't know what Wolves are this season yet, so that could, in a couple of weeks, look a bit different. But West Ham in the second half, I mean, that front four of Antonio, Benrahma, Fornals and Bowen looked really, really sharp. And
Fornals was very good.
Really good. A player who I think a lot was expected of him, and he hasn't really performed yet in a West Ham shirt. Interesting to see Benrahma playing more centrally, or give him a bit more of a free role. I think that Jesse Lingard's arrival last season in January probably stunted any progress Benrahma was going to make. And I was surprised to see how little impact he did make in his debut season, because he is a very, very good footballer. And with, you know, Declan Rice and Thomas Salcek as well, suddenly this West Ham team looks so solid. I think it's going to be a great game. I wouldn't really... You know, gladly for me, Steve's the one who's providing the tip here, because I found it very hard to find much value between two sides who I think are pretty evenly matched. And if I had to say, you know, I'm probably somebody who values Brendan Rodgers' tactical acumen above David Moyes's, but the history books certainly show that Moyes has the better of his counterparts. So, a really tight one. Looking forward to seeing it.
Go on then, Steve. What is your tip?
Well, there's only been one 0-0, Dan, in the last 25 games between these two sides. So historically, there has been a number of goals. I like West Ham last season were great, weren't they, from set pieces. They may have been the highest scoring side from set pieces last season. Leicester City had their problems. Craig Dawson is a player that I know a lot about. He'll run through a brick wall for you. He's great at set pieces. He's not the tallest, but he's great in the air. I think he can take advantage. I know Leicester gave up a few chances last week against Wolves as well. Kilman had a few chances, didn't he? I think even Connor Cody was spotted in the box as well. So I'm going to go for Craig Dawson to get out the mark this season. I think he's around the 10-1 mark to score at any time. So that's where I'm going to play that.
Before we depart then, let's get a top tip from both of you for the weekend. George, you're up first.
As much as I want to say Fabinho's yellow card, I think Lukaku at 7-2 first goal scorer is the bet of the weekend. I just know that if this fixture was taking place in 6 weeks, it would be a lot shorter than that. So I'm excited to hopefully see him get off the mark in his second Chelsea career.
Yeah, I'm going to go for goals down on the south coast at St Mary's in a fixture that normally produces a lot of them as well. We've talked about the Southampton midfield. We talk about Manchester United's midfield and the full of confidence keeping that unbeaten record away and trying to equal Arsene Wenger's record as well at 27 games unbeaten. I'm going to go for over 4.5 goals, Southampton versus Manchester United.
Thanks very much, guys. And there's just enough time to remind you that you can sign up to The Athletic and benefit from the insight of some of the best sports writers in the business. You can do that at the moment for just £3.33 a month by heading to theathletic.com/Ornstein. Thanks to George and Steve for joining me. And listeners, if you want to hit subscribe so you never miss a show, that would be great. And leave us a review too, if you're feeling generous. We'll be back next Friday morning. Have an excellent weekend. Cheers.
The Athletic.